is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. And that, of course, is the Beatles classic from their White Album, Back in the USSR, which is a perfect lead-in to our next segment. I'm a lifelong Beatles fan, which makes me officially jealous of my guest. His name is Leslie Woodhead, who is a documentary filmmaker in England. And I'm jealous of him because in 1962, he happened to be in a little club in Liverpool, England, where four guys got up on stage and started creating some of the music that would later change the world. Those guys, of course, were the Beatles. Leslie, the book is called How the Beatles Rocked the Kremlin, and we'll get to the Kremlin part of the story in a moment, but welcome to America Weekend, and please tell me about that night in the Cavern Club.
I'd be happy to do that. I've never forgotten it. I heard that there were these four guys. I was a very, very raw TV guy, and we were interested in new things in the region, so I slept over to Liverpool. Met a guy called Brian Epstein. He took me down into this sweaty cellar, and there were these four kids making this amazing sound. I met with them. I remember Paul said to me in the pub afterwards, it must be so glamorous working in TV. I thought, yeah, in your dreams. And a couple of weeks later, we got them. We came and filmed them for the very first time.
When you filmed them, were they thinking, ooh, this is our big break?
Yes, I think they were, amazingly. They hadn't been on TV or filmed by anyone else. They'd just been kind of beginning to make their first record, Love Me Do, but it was very, very early in their life. So I think rather bizarrely, they regarded me as their opportunity to become big stars.
Now, the idea behind the book, which I'm fascinated by, is the influence that the Beatles and, frankly, other Western rock and roll bands had inside the USSR. Now, just a personal story for me, I went to the Soviet Union in its last days in June of 1989. I did a week of live broadcasts from Moscow back here to American radio. And it was just a few months after Paul McCartney had finally released his first official album in the USSR called Back in the USSR. And I met some people who had copies of that album, and they told me this was not the first time they'd gotten their hands on Beatles music, that it had been going around in the underground in Russia for a quarter of a century at that point. You experienced that yourself, didn't you?
I absolutely did. When I first started going there, in my case in the mid-80s, I heard from many, many people, did I know how vital the Beatles were? And I said, yeah, like everywhere. And they said, no, it's completely different here. They were so, well, first of all, they were illegal. You could lose your job or your education by having a Beatles record. But that made them even more desirable. So a whole generation of kids had fallen in love with the Beatles, even though the Kremlin was telling them that this was evil and not to be thought of. Weirdly, when I started to film in Russia, people also told me they'd seen this little film that I'd made in 62, which was incredible. I couldn't imagine how that had reached them, but they knew more about it than I did.
How did they get their hands on these things? How did these things become bootleg recordings in the Soviet Union?
I think two ways. First of all, they listened to radio stations illicitly. They listened to Radio Luxembourg or to BBC World Service. And the other thing is that just a few kids had parents who were privileged. And interestingly, a lot of the Beatles' first generation were the kids of privileged parents who were able to go to the West and bring an album back with them secretly. The kids then took this and inscribed it, copied it, bootlegged it onto X-ray plates of their Uncle Sergei's lungs, the only vinyl that was available. Incredible but true. So these records on ribs were the first Beatles music. In fact, I've got one at home. You can see the ribs, and it plays Please Please Me.
That's astounding. How do they have record cutting technology even when it wasn't a record?
Well, apparently on many street corners in particularly Moscow and Leningrad, there were like street side booths where homesick soldiers could record messages for their mum and their girlfriend. So they took these bootlegged albums into those places and inscribed them onto the vinyl.
That is unbelievable, putting it on X-rays.
That's right.
And can you see the grooves on there?
Absolutely. It's astonishing, actually. You can see the grooves, and you can see the X-rayed innards of Uncle Sergei.
Wow. That's amazing. This is America Weekend. I'm Paul Harris, talking with Leslie Woodhead, who's got a terrific new book called How the Beatles Rocked the Kremlin, The Untold Story of a Noisy Revolution. But they couldn't be noisy when they were listening to this. When you talk about it being underground, they really had to do everything in secret, didn't they?
Absolutely. I mean, I talked to many people who were threatened for their schooling or for their jobs if they displayed any enthusiasm for the Beatles. And certainly if they had an album, you could be in big trouble. The regime was so down on the Beatles that they even had guys at the airport with scratching machines that could rip the grooves out of any album that they impounded as it was coming through the airport. And in fact, this absurd overkill by the authorities had quite a lot to do with building the reputation for the Beatles. I think the kids concluded that anything that was that undesirable has got to be interesting, the forbidden fruit, and that made them even bigger.
Now, obviously, there were no such thing as Beatles cover bands in those days, at least not officially.
Not officially, although, interestingly, from the, I guess, mid to late 60s, the Beatles generated a huge groundswell of local rock and roll bands, every one of which, I was told, there were thousands of them eventually, claimed their descent from being inspired by the Beatles. And in order to make their own music, they had to improvise wildly. They had to sew up their grandma's kitchen table to make a body for a guitar. They had to raid phone boxes to pull the coils out of the handsets to make amplifiers for their guitars. So it was very, very homemade, but very, very inspired by the Beatles.
And you also write in the book about some Beatles super fans who you've met.
That's right. A guy called Kolya Vasin in what was then Leningrad, now St. Petersburg, has built a John Lennon temple that completely fills his tiny apartment. It's full of every piece of Beatles memorabilia you could ever imagine, hanging from the ceiling, standing on a table. He called his cat Hey Jude, and his current project is to build a 300-foot monument to John Lennon in Leningrad.
A different kind of Leningrad.
Exactly, very different.
Yeah. None of the Beatles played officially in the USSR while it was still called that. But Paul McCartney finally went back and did a show in Red Square, which became a big TV special, 10 years ago in 2003. And I remember watching that. I think it was on HBO here in the States. And seeing them interviewing people who talked about how they had loved the Beatles their whole lives. And they were people who were middle-aged at that point. So they were the ones who grew up with it exactly as you're talking. But tell me what the impact of that particular concert was on these grown-up and even youth Russians.
That was an absolutely transformative event. I mean, there were 100,000 people in Red Square of all ages in tears. There were floods of tears, I was told, rivers of tears. And people said it just defined their entire life to have a real Beatle in Red Square playing to them. One of the people who was utterly lit up by this event was Putin's chief deputy, a guy called Sergei Ivanov, who I interviewed and who told me he'd been in love with the Beatles all his life and in fact learned English from listening to Beatles lyrics. He speaks exquisite English. He then went on to bomb the hell out of Chechnya, so obviously he didn't quite imbibe the peace and love bit, but he's a passionate Beatles fan.
Do Paul and Ringo know the impact that they had in the 60s? Obviously, they know about the rest of the world, but do they know about this underground culture that embraced them in the Soviet Union?
I don't think they did until very late. I mean, Paul was still hearing about it in 2003 when he did that concert. Very little of that seeped out at the time. Obviously, they know a great deal about it now. One of the things, that record you were talking about that Paul made just for the Russian market, that became a very hot property for merchant sailors sailing from the Soviet Union to the West, because taking that record, which was unavailable in the West, earned them enough money in Germany or France to go and buy a second-hand car and import it back into Russia. So they called it Paul's Golden Disc. In fact, they all said there should be statues to Paul in the cities rather than Lenin.
Wow. Lenin. Capitalism of a different different kind.
Yeah, right.
In the home of communism. Fascinating. Leslie, it is a terrific book, and what a great story, and thank you so much for sharing it.
Thanks so much, Paul.
Leslie Woodhead, the book is called How the Beatles Rocked the Kremlin, The Untold Story of a Noisy Revolution. By the way, that McCartney album that he did for the USSR, no Beatles songs on it, all covers. He was a cover band himself. I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend. America Weekend.